Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience, and I encourage you to go there today. It is by far, I think, the most comprehensive real estate website serving this area and all the markets that we serve all across upstate, out to Phoenix, Arizona, even to Boston, Massachusetts. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA, and the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage, call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and all that is guaranteed. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our Second Look program, which if you doubt our guarantee and you've been qualified with another bank and you've got a piece of paper that says these are the terms under which someone will lend you money, please, please, please call Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. If we can't beat it, we'll give you $50 in a gift card. So you've got nothing to lose, everything in the world to gain for the next 15 or 30 years. So call there today, 633-3700. And ask about our pre-purchase commitment also. Pre-purchase commitment, get that. So you get committed for a loan before you even find a house. So all you need to do is find the house. And it allows you at no risk or cost, no cost up front, no risk, to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. So in this competitive marketplace, that's a good thing. So call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700 for personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. So check out that low rate guarantee. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. Our local number, though, 716-631-4800, and enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is. The hotline will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers. And I just revisited that service recently, and it's really remarkable. You could fiddle around with your phone, Google an address, but this is faster and better, I assure you. And it doesn't have to be our listing. It can be anybody's listing. So you drive by a sign, there's 14 pictures and phone numbers and text numbers on it. Just ignore all that. Call 631-4800. All you have to do is know the street number. The rest will take you where you need to go. All to you directly. We have a very active real estate market today. I encourage you to check it out. And if you've ever thought about selling your home, there's probably never been a better time in Western New York, because as we've seen demand rise, supply decline, that's a recipe for increased values. And you may find that you have more value in your home than you ever thought possible. So call Hunt Real Estate today, 633-9400, and ask about anything relative to real estate. But if you're thinking about selling, have one of our real estate professionals stop by your home, give you a free analysis of your home, including recommendations on staging, all kinds of things relative to marketing. It's all free, 633-9400. And if you do make that call, I want you to be reminded that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. So there's an assurance there that this will be an efficient process for you, whether you're buying or selling. We are broadcast live here at WBEN 930 AM. And if you want to participate in today's call, call us here at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls. And you can tell your friends if they want to listen to the show at WBEN.com. We're live there too. And our shows are archived at HuntRealEstate.com. So if you can only catch part of the show, just wait till Monday and you can go and hear the whole thing or any piece of it that you'd like. We are the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. And I have never seen anything like this in my lifetime, starting out as strong as we have, both teams. Very exciting. We're number one. We're number one in the NHL right now.
Crazy.
And we're only
crazy good.
And, and we're only four plays away from being number one in the NFL too. Four plays against the Patriots. I was there I wasn't there. I'm sorry. I was watching diligently on television. It was painful. Anyway, we've got a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Dottie Gallagher-Cohen. She is the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. Good morning, Dottie.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you back. You're a regular guest, not frequent enough, but regular.
This is my seventh time. I like to think of myself as the Alec Baldwin of the Peter Hunt Show.
Anytime you want. You're welcome here, Dottie, of course.
Thank you.
Because you always have great information for us and our whole community, which is critical. You have a kind of unique position in the community, but give our listeners, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but let them know your Buffalo roots and how you got where you are.
Well, I'm a lifelong. I was born in Mercy Hospital, and actually spent some time in New York City. My mom was from there as a small child, but we moved back here.
I remember her accent.
Yeah, that's right. She worked for you. That's
right. She still had a little New York accent.
She did, and mine comes out when I'm super tired. We lived there for a little bit, but we came back to Buffalo, and Buffalo was always home. In fact, my father was the oldest of 10, South Buffalo Irish family, and I would sort of have respite from New York City and spend about a month of every summer with my grandparents. So I have all these friends from South Buffalo I've known forever, and when we moved back to Buffalo, my father didn't want to live near his brothers and sisters, so we moved to North Buffalo. So I always joke I have dual citizenship on both sides of the Peace Bridge, North and South Buffalo. So, yeah, but I've been around, and, you know, most of my professional jobs throughout my career have all had the word Buffalo in them. You know, I worked for Buffalo Place back when we launched the Thursday at the Square concert series. I was president of Visit Buffalo Niagara, and now I'm president of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, which is the regional chamber. Ironically, in high school, I was voted most spirited, and people said, you'll be the president of the regional chamber someday, and I never thought I would be, but here I am, and I guess doing that job.
You also were at the Buffalo News.
I was for 15 years, yeah.
A very important time in the Buffalo News.
Yeah.
That was the time when things were going digital.
I was actually put in charge of the digital transformation. At that time, we were the very last major newspaper to go online, and it was for a lot of reasons. And it was a wonderful time to be there, but also a really challenging time. You know, the paper was having what I used to term a monopoly hangover, and really we just wanted the internet to go away in the early days. But Stan Lipsey and Warren Colville, the two guys who were really in charge, actually had a lot of vision around it and really pushed to get us further along. But you know, it is I think it was sort of the heyday of that business, and I miss it every day, honestly. I love the business.
You know, it's very interesting what's happened. Warren's been on the show, even with his daughter, actually, a couple times. So we've looked at kind of the world of journalism through youthful eyes as well as well-experienced eyes. And it's interesting what's happening in that business. But that's another story, and we can cover that another time. What really is a story today is, in my mind anyway, and it's something that the partnership has addressed for over 20 years because I was involved with it way back then, is how competitive we are vis-a-vis other communities. And this is it's a big question. I'm not going to say how are we or why are we, but if you were to explore that, where would you begin?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting problem. And this is as someone who went most spirited, the most difficult line to walk, because the reality is compared to ourselves, we're doing much better. And certainly if you look around downtown and the neighborhoods, even you can see that we are a different place. We have really great access to the waterfront now, which, as you know, didn't exist 20 years ago. Our culturals are very strong, which again, years ago they were not. So many of the things that were troublesome have really gotten a lot better. And that renaissance, which is what people call it, you know, I think has actually created a false sense of security to our residents, because it looks so different and it feels so different that I guess we've made it. And the fact of the matter is, we're only doing that well compared to ourselves. So what do I mean by that? If you look at the top 100 counties in the United States, ranked by the number of private sector jobs that have been created in that county over a period of 5, 6, 7, 8, you can pick whatever time period you want. But even recently, we are still in the bottom 10. We are in 92, 93. So we are not creating that number of jobs. And the other dynamic that's happening that is really, you know, I'm consumed about right now is that we are still bleeding people. I mean, the most recent numbers show a net And if you look at in-migration, the number of people who are moving into our community versus out-migration, the people who have left, we have stemmed the tide of out-migration, right? So not as many people are leaving as once did, because there are jobs here and they don't have to leave. But when you actually net it out, we're still losing, the last numbers, 4,800 people every year. And so that dynamic combined with the labor market the way it is really is troublesome in terms of holding on to the jobs we have. And really economic development moving forward is all about people. I will tell you, at the partnership, we have really pivoted completely in terms of investing in workforce and talent issues to help employers get organized for this very, very competitive space.
I want to come back to that. We had Steve Tucker on last week.
He's terrific,
From Northland, and that was a very interesting discussion. We could have talked all day. But it's, and I want to come back to workforce development, but the question I've asked many times, and it's, I don't know if we have data on this, but it's not just how many people we're losing, it's who we're losing and why. Can you answer that question?
Well, it's so interesting you should ask that. I actually found out we can answer that question.
Really?
And I'm working with our partners at Invest Buffalo Niagara. They provide research services for us. And looking at the, you know, I want the answer to that question so that we can really begin to develop a strategy. Now, what I will tell you is back in the day, we were losing a lot of young people. And actually, compared to the rest of New York State, and young adults, we are pacing ahead of the rest of New York State in terms of the number of people that are living here between the ages of 20 and 34. So the statewide average is 5%. We're at 5.6%. That is a good, positive, and necessary change. So that has happened. But what we don't know now, and my preliminary look at the data, and we're digging deeper, is that the people who are leaving look like are leaving in the same percentage in terms of the population distribution.
Really?
So there isn't it's just as many, because I, you know, in some ways, and people say, well, I hope it's all, you know, the older people who are leaving. And I have to tell you, that doesn't sound good to me, because when they leave, their wealth leaves the community, and it really impacts businesses like yours dramatically.
Huge.
So, you know, so I guess that's the good news, that they're leaving sort of in the right proportion. But, you know, so the why question, I have some theories on it. I mean, this is a very expensive place to live. Our taxes are very, very high. And so when you are faced with, you know, those options where you could move somewhere else and get paid more than you can get paid here. And your cost
just by moving.
Right. So cost of living. So we talk about real estate values going up, which is actually has happened. And it's great for all the folks who are owning homes in our community, finally. But I'll tell you just an anecdotal story. My brother just retired from government service. He was going to move back to Buffalo. He's living in Atlanta right now. And he said to me, you know, Daddy, I did the math. You know, the housing prices have gone up so much and the taxes are so high. You know, I can live on the beach in North Carolina. Why am I coming back to Buffalo? I can have my retirement dream now. So I always say to people, yes, wages are going up and housing values are going up. That's a good thing, because it means we're more competitive. The bad news is we have to be more competitive.
Right.
So we have to deal. We can no longer trade off and say, well, yeah, well, there's a super low cost of living here and you don't have to pay people as much. So locate your business here or do what you have to do. We are losing what we've leaned on as our competitive advantages. Now we really, truly have to get competitive. And part of that is going to have to be making government be a little more efficient and reasonable. And it's not going that way. It's going the opposite way, as you know.
Well, I have a theory about that, which I developed my freshman year in college.
Okay.
When my political leanings were changing abruptly. It goes something like this. Legislators legislate to create legislation. They exist to create legislation. Every piece of legislation creates a set of regulations because it must be enforced.
Correct.
Every set of regulations, in order to be reinforced, requires a bureaucracy. And bureaucracies exist to perpetuate themselves. So once a law goes into place, no matter what it is, it creates that chain. And then you've got a series of government employees doing their job, and no one wants to see them lose their job.
Right.
And a government job is about as secure a job as there exists in the world today, U.S. government job. As a result, once we put something in place, which might have the greatest of intentions, no matter what it is, the unintended consequence is that we grow the government. It has to happen. So people go to Albany or the county legislature or even the common council or the government or the Congress or something with all these great intentions. They're going to change the world. But every time they implement something or legislate something, it creates that chain of events which invariably grows government, which becomes more costly. We in New York State have the most costly government.
Well, not only are you right, but I'll give you a living example of right now, which is the moving up of the minimum wage, which was done with the very best of intentions.
Of course.
But it has created a huge problem. The governor is actually just convening a commission to study it, because people who are now making a higher minimum wage are losing government benefits. So they actually have less money to live on. So it's actually, in some ways, made for some people their situation worse. So the unintended consequences of these decisions, which is what I feel like my job is to talk to elected officials about, do you understand down the supply chain what happens when you decide this? You know, I mean, we do this report at the partnership called the Metro 50 Report. And it's we've done it 7 or 8 times now, and we do it when we see something in the community that the public discourse is off the mark big time, because it sounds good and people sound like they're wonderful people. So I'll give you another example in downtown with the downtown housing changes that have been made, which the partnership worked in conjunction with the city to make happen. A bunch of old dilapidated buildings that people would have to walk by are now apartments where people are actually living. And actually in downtown, which residency has gone up 10%, if you look at the demographics of that community, nobody's been pushed out. The same number of low-income workers are working in downtown. And we've actually brought young people downtown, et cetera, and so forth. Well, now, you know, the city council and the Erie County IDA, well, we have to have inclusionary zoning. We, you know, people are getting priced out of downtown. You know, that is complete nonsense. It's nonsense in the sense that they didn't live there before. So nobody got moved out. As a matter of fact, I think in all the building that's happened in downtown Buffalo, only one of those buildings had any sort of occupation in it. So inclusionary zoning, when you looked at the Metro 50, there was not a single market, not one. Five below us and five above us that had any sort of mandatory inclusionary zoning. And the way they wanted to implement it here was to do it with no offsetting incentive. So the developer would have to sort of eat the cost. Well, getting projects done here is not easy. Our construction costs are a little bit higher than the national average, and our rents are a little bit lower than the national average. So you throw a cost on top of that, and you know, and the intention is good, right? The intention is we don't want people who can't afford, who want to live downtown, to be able to live downtown. Absolutely. Do we need to build more affordable housing? Yes, we do, because our housing stock is old. But to say the way we're going to fix that problem is we're going to force anybody making an investment to create this as part of that investment in a city like Buffalo, where we're still losing people, is really bad. You know, I mean, development will stop. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that we find ourselves up against all the time, and it's extremely difficult.
Do you ever feel like it's kind of like whack-a-mole? You know, you
all the time
see something that pops up, and you and your organization move to work on that, and then something else pops up. And
well, we have 7 goals that are around things like our location, our binational location, building the economy. One of our goals is to be nimble, because we know something is going to come at us that we do not anticipate, that's going to need a response. And I will say this, Peter, about your comment about legislators. One of the joys of my job is I've gotten to know a lot of elected officials at every level. I'm talking about from, you know, small town supervisors to our local state officials. And almost without exception, those people are very, very committed and really want to do good things. And honestly, it is a thankless job what they do. So I think for me, the way I see it is trying to bring to them, you know, sort of the reality of the data and the numbers and what we learn from other communities, so we don't make yet another mistake. But it's extremely difficult in this environment where the state is right now, and where Albany is, which is, you know, a move to the sharp left, and passing a lot of things that are creating more costs, making it more costly to do business in New York State, and that's going to mean more jobs are going to leave. I mean, that's the unintended consequence.
Let's go back to that inclusionary zoning issue just for a second. A lot of the people locally look to New York City and all kinds of things,
right,
and say, well, they got away with it there, and we could get away with it here. first of all, they don't even know what the effect is on New York City. But what they do know is that New York City now has an oversupply of office buildings, office space, I should say, as proven by the fact that WeWork pulled its IPO, which was a huge, huge, huge thing that people don't quite get. But it was a huge thing in our business. It was a huge thing. But, you know, it's when you as you're talking, I'm thinking about what we say in golf, that every shot makes somebody happy. Just like every shot makes somebody sad, too,
right,
most of the time. So, and it's the same thing in what you're saying.
But you know, you talk about, so let's take San Francisco, New York, and you're right. That's what the activists here point to while they do it there. Well, those markets, people are trying to move into those markets. And San Francisco, for example, is losing a lot of its independently owned restaurants because they literally can't get anybody to work there because you can't afford to live anywhere near San Francisco. That means working in a restaurant in downtown San Francisco makes sense. That requires a government response. That requires an organized effort around affordable housing. But when your market rate rents are, you know, three times the national average, and you ask, and even in those markets, they've incentivized that development through tax credits, et cetera. But in those markets where there is a margin on the rent side, there is more room to play with. But that is not here. We may have a neighborhood that is really hot, but we have many of them, but we don't have a problem with gentrification here.
No, we don't. As a matter of fact, we talked about this topic just yesterday at the I happen to be part of the Dean's Council at the School of Architecture, Planning, and now Real Estate at UB, which is one of the finest departments of its kind in the country.
It is.
Which is a remarkable thing, a great thing for our community, and something that I think that's little known. But it was amazing how often, as we considered what the schools is involved with now with affordable housing, which is a remarkable effort, and I would encourage all of our listeners to stop by Hayes Hall, if they ever get a chance, at the South Campus, and look at the display in the center of the first floor there in the foyer area on affordable housing, because it's really quite remarkable what the school has done, not just what they've done, but what they're doing in conjunction with private citizens like John Summers at Harmac
and
Bailey
and Nick Sinatra. There's a lot of,
There's a bunch of very, very good things going on, but our housing by definition is affordable compared to the rest of the country.
Right.
So now we've got to make it more affordable.
But just as a side note, we have a bigger issue here because our housing stock is so old and we have a lot of lead paint, et cetera.
No question. We'll be right back with more from our hosters with Dottie Gallagher Cohen after these important messages. Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available not just here, and by the way, it's up to date, by the hour, up to date, but not just here, but all across upstate and all the markets we serve. And I mention that because many of you may have the Zillow app on your phone and quickly rush to that no matter what you're thinking about, or Realtor.com, or even go to Google to find out something, but none of those places have any obligation to be accurate because they're not brokers. We have a direct obligation to the public and to our clients to make sure that all the information that's published on our site is accurate and up to date, and that's every hour. So you can trust the information you're going to see on our website more than you can trust the information you're going to see on any other website. That's HuntRealEstate.com. You'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our many exclusive programs, call there today, 633-3700, and ask for details, including the program that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before but live the after. That's the first mortgage, not a line of credit later on. It's a first mortgage. And by the way, you have to have estimates to go along with that. So you know what you're in for. And it's a tremendous program, and not enough people take advantage of it. And then they get into the house, and they find out things are way more expensive than they thought, and they look at each other and scratch their heads, how are we going to do this? Call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700, to avoid that problem. And also ask about our pre-purchase commitment. And if you have a question about anything relative to real estate, anytime, call 633-9400. That's the Hunt Customer Service Center, the only one of its kind in North America. We'll answer your question right there, or we'll direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan. Stop into one of our many open houses this weekend and ask our real estate professionals about that program or anything else relative to real estate. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Dottie Gallagher, who is the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, which is our local advocacy group, not to mention our kind of version of our Chamber of Commerce. And we've heard in the first segment about Dottie's background, being a Buffalo girl, and everything she's done to aid our community since coming back here and taking up the cause that is to make us a better community.
That's right.
And that's what it's all about. Dottie, we have a caller on the line. Let's go to that call first, and then we'll come back to what you were just about to say before I cut you off before the break. This is Gustav from Waysville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's talk about the process by which I think towns can opt in or not to the rent stabilization, rent control that was just put through the legislature in New York.
Sure. This is a great example of the power of New York City and its impact on the rest of the state. So with rent stabilization, that's the friendly name they gave it, is really rent control. And there are staggering new regulations on people who are renting their properties to other people. Things like
a lot of two-family homes and a lot of
some of them are exempt from that
if you're living there.
There's a lot of this is extremely complicated, and actually we've been picking it apart and trying to sort of educate the local community about it, and I only know enough to be dangerous.
But it's scared people away, is what I'm trying to say.
Without a doubt. And by the way, just because it's not included now doesn't mean that with the next stroke of a pen it will be included. This is what happens often, where Albany will pass something. I'll give you an example: paid family leave, and say, "Well, don't worry, this is going to be a payroll tax essentially, and it's going to be painless for everyone." And then they all of a sudden say, "Well, it's more expensive than we thought. Well, we better charge employers more money and do a payroll tax." And so, these things are either like a, seven-headed hydra. They just keep, like you say, perpetuating themselves and growing. But in rent stabilization, for example, one of the things are you can't even begin a process to evict now until a tenant is in arrears for 3 months. So I want you to think about somebody, and this is pointed at these big New York City developers who have a lot of cash flow. But if you're a local investor and you've got a 12 unit property and this is how you make a living, okay, that they don't have that kind of cash. And so again, the unintended consequences are significant. We've got some information on our website, I believe. If not, we'll get it up there on Monday. On
What is the website?
It's thepartnership.org.
Thepartnership.org.
And if it's not up now, we'll get it up on Monday to really look at all of the elements. And that the caller is picking up another example of what I'm talking about this progressive lien, which, the New York State economy and the upstate economy are two different economies. And the loss of the Republican majority in the Senate, regardless of where you are politically, means we have one party rule in Albany. And when the governor is the most responsible adult in the room, and he's very liberal, and I have a lot of respect for the governor, he understands economics to some degree. Mm-hmm. It's an impossible situation. It is really, and it's getting worse by the day.
Well, we want to get to some encouraging news.
Sorry.
we'll get there sooner.
Listen, there are so many good things that are happening too.
There are, and we'll get to those because I don't want to depress everybody.
I'm sorry.
No. We have to talk about the facts here, but let's talk about the good facts too. Here's Tom from Amherst. Tom, how can we help you?
Yes, these new rules that
turn your radio off, Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Much better. Thanks. Go ahead.
Okay, these new rules that New York State has brought in, pretty much favoring the tenants. I have my very first double that I purchased in the city of Buffalo. I'm looking to do a 1031 exchange to get into a 4-unit, 6-unit, 12-unit. Mm-hmm. And in the city, I don't mind being there. But right now, as it is, it's so difficult for a landlord to get rid of a bad tenant that pretty much the tenant, before everything is all said and done, the tenant can pretty much live there 3-4 months without paying a dime.
Well, is this a question, Tom? I mean, you've stated a fact, which we were just talking about, but how can we help you with this, Tom?
Is there any place that I can go to get a simplified version of these new rules that are in that the New York State passed in June?
Yeah, like I said, I think we've done a seminar on this topic for property owners, and we have taken the sort of the most onerous parts and simplified what the law said before and what it says now. I'm pretty sure we put that up on our website. I know we've got a blog on our website on thepartnership.org. My email is on that website, so anybody who wants, I'll make sure that you get the material that we've produced to help explain, because it is extremely complicated and is, Peter, to your point, creating a sort of skittishness about people like your caller who are willing to make an investment but now are a little bit nervous about how safe an investment that is. So
there's no question about
it. We can get that to them.
And one of the great things about Buffalo, Niagara, the whole region, is that we have this incredible collection of pretty good two-family, three-family, four-family properties that are really the entry level for many investors and a source of their future wealth.
Exactly.
And now we're just throwing this huge roadblock in the way to that investment. And I think it will have a ripple effect on the value of these properties. And that's what concerns me greatly. And I know people are well-intentioned when they pass a law like that.
Right.
We've got to protect somebody who might be struggling for a month or two. I get all that. But like Tom was saying, it also... You create an underground.
But this is the issue because that law was passed really because of there are bad actors, predatory landlords I'm talking about,
right,
particularly in places like New York. So you pass a law to sort of, to punish, the whole class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody is a bad actor. And the same is true with tenants. Some are genuine issues, and some of them are rigging the system. So you're passing a law that you think is helping everybody, and it really is just creating a mess for everybody.
Let's change the topic.
Please.
Here a little bit. we have a text. By the way, you can text us here at 30930, and we've got people that are saying, let's move on, and we've also got people saying, what about this Medicaid issue? And by the way, one of our callers says, you are the best guest.
Well, somebody else said they're sleeping, so it's not a universal opinion.
Well, I think we beat up that other topic enough. But
yeah,
I agree. But Medicaid is a kind of a thorn in everybody's side here. Beginning with New York State, there's 36, as you know, there's 36 aspects to the Medicaid regulations, and 33 of them are adopted by or programs that are adopted by New York State, which is more than Texas and California combined.
I know.
Clear on that. And I asked one of our elected officials about that, and he said, well, which ones do you withdraw from? I don't know, but somebody put them in place.
It goes back to your earlier point. But, just so we can move off of this, Albany stinks time frame that we're on here, the bottom line is this: anytime Albany passes a law where there are unfunded mandates, and it's happening more and more, rent stabilization is an example, and Medicaid is the poster child of all of this, it winds up getting pushed down on a local level, which really impedes local lawmakers to actually do what they are here to do. So this is the issue. And I would say to all of your listeners, if you don't think these things apply to you, they do, and you need to, and Albany will listen to voters, and so you have to be better educated, and you've got to help them connect the dots.
And if you go back to our website and listen to our show from a couple weeks ago with the county executive, he goes over the percentages that we cover here in this area, and it's a lot. It was reduced somewhat fairly recently, but the actual dollar amount is still staggeringly high and really consumes most of our property tax.
But, I think, Peter, just to move on to something more positive for your listeners, I mean, to me, what has happened here in terms of, I think the number that I've seen is $5 billion of investment in assets here between the medical campus, Canal Side, our cultural organizations, what's happening at the Albright. I mean, this community punches way above its weight class in terms of the kinds of how rich a community is that we have here in terms of our assets and our proximity to Niagara Falls. I could go on and on. Our access to fresh water. There are so many things to me that make living here great. And we need to double down on those things, and we need to really help attract people to live here. So the advocacy side of us having to beat up Albany, this is a pendulum. It's going to swing. Eventually, the math's not going to add up, and they're going to have to figure out they got to change. And that would be painful. But in the meantime, we have this unbelievable set of assets here and tremendous access. I mean, you talk to people that you know that live in cities like a San Francisco or a New York or a Boston, for example, about how hard their lives are just getting to work and getting home. We don't have any of that here. So as a place to, you know, if we really got serious about being competitive, as a place to live, there are very few places that I think can duplicate the quality of life that we have here. And part of the quality of life that we have here are the people who live here who are amazing, right? And the culture that we have here. So
we come back from the break. I want to talk about that. And the implications really on a workforce development. Because that's really
great.
Kind of the platform from which we must grow to keep,
exactly.
To keep all those assets viable. And we'll be right back with more from our house cheers after these important messages. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the low rate and closing costs guarantee, and also the second look program, which I encourage you to try out. If you've even gone down the path with another lender but you haven't bought a house yet, just give it a second look. Just make sure you're getting the best deal possible. And also look at that pre-purchase commitment at no risk or cost to you. You can enter the market effectively with cash. We are in the studio today with Donnie Gallagher, the president and CEO of our Buffalo Niagara Partnership, which is our version of the chamber. And let's start there on our way back to positiveness.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, this is the solutions part of the show,
this
right?
This is the solutions part of the show. And let's start with kind of the biggest challenge that really the whole economy is facing in the United States today, and that's filling good jobs with good people that are trained to do those jobs.
Yep.
So you have been part of an effort that was originally, I think, part of a joint venture with United Way, and there's a bunch of it been of evolution. What's happened?
Yeah.
To all that?
So there's a lot of things that we're doing. So first of all, we've got the issue that we have here in our community is that 20% of our workforce is going to retire in the next 7 to 10 years. So just people, baby boomers, basically, that are aging out of the workforce. And so we need to be able to replace those workers. And you aptly point out that this is an issue around the country. So how do we do that? And how do we make sure that that happens? So there's at the partnership, we've done two things. We studied best practices around the country. It took us about 2 years. And we actually have a model that we're trying to follow. One is, it's actually two different things we're doing. One is that what you refer to, what we're doing with United Way, and they're an active participant, but there are 190 community partners that are involved in this effort. It's called Employ Buffalo Niagara. And it is getting employers and workforce intermediaries and education training providers to actually try to figure out how can we make the system work better for people who are trying to access it. And the work of that group, and this is why the United Way is a key partner, is really focused around the working poor. If you are a working poor person in any community, you're really, you know, pardon my French, but you're really screwed, okay? Because you can't get any real assistance. You can't get training dollars, for example. And by the way, you're working two part-time jobs. You probably don't have benefits. You're probably on public assistance. And it really, their lives are complicated. Yet, if you talk to an employer, they want someone who's resilient, who can show up for work every day. Well, many of those people have unused talents. So the whole purpose of that coalition is really trying to find ways to make it easier for employers to hire those people who really want a career and more than just a bunch of part-time jobs, and to figure out how we can advocate to make the system work more efficiently for them, like things like daycare subsidies, which are absolute necessities for folks like that. So the other thing we're doing is something called talent pipeline management, which is based on a best practice that the U.S. Chamber has developed, which uses a supply chain model for talent development. And the fundamental piece of this is that employers all have to hire the same sort of role. Mm-hmm. So it can be cross-sector, or it could be within an industry.
Like technology jobs.
Yeah, it could be like coders, as an example. Or it could be auto tech. There's a great example,
sure.
right? So So competitors have to get around a table and understand they actually share a workforce. And stealing your guy is not a sustainable way to do it. So you got to look at the entire supply chain, from career awareness, how can we work better together to get more people to choose and know that that's an option, to education and training, where we're aligned that the schools are actually teaching what employers need for those people to get those jobs, and then really working to help move people into those roles. So that is done through a series of what we call them collaboratives. We've got four or five of them going now. They're really right now at a demonstration project stage, but it's super exciting because we see other places around the country that have adopted this model, and we were early adopters, so we're all approaching it a little bit differently. We started with the full community collaboration. A lot of communities didn't. They just started with the employers. So we can see that this is really, really an opportunity for us to try to really paint the picture of opportunity that's here. You know, of all the 23 colleges and universities that we have in our region, only about half of those people stay and work here. About half leave. We export them. Now, a lot of them come here with not the intention of staying, but boy, if we did a better job of getting organized around opportunity here, we probably could hang on to more of those folks. And we see that as an absolute opportunity.
What's the number of graduates from those 23 schools every year? That means
I think I have that number Peter. Keep talking.
I've had a bunch of numbers thrown at me here sitting in the studio, but it's a kind of a slippery. I don't quite know. But say there's 80,000 total, so that would mean 15,000-20,000 graduating every year. But let's say it's about right. 15,000 or 20,000 people would go a long way to filling a lot of those jobs that are going to be vacant in the next.
Right.
And we have things like what we talked about last week, which I think is part of the discussion you had, which is the Northland Training Center, which is huge. But there's only a couple hundred people in the program right now. It's a difficult program, difficult to get into, and I understand that. And it should be selective. At the same time, we've got a lot of the jobs they're training for are the most needed right now.
Right. Well, yes. I mean, this is the whole issue. And quite honestly, employers need to change a little bit of the way they do work. So, you know, you read some job descriptions and it looks like they want to hire Jesus Christ. And if Lazarus walked in, they'd be offered the job on the spot. That how employers communicate out the sort of barriers and rules that they put in place sometimes that avoid them getting the kind of people that that a CEO tells me they want, but their HR person is screening out. That is also part of the systems change we're trying to drive. And I have to say, there've been quite a few aha moments. And you might say, well, why is the partnership got special sauce to do this? Employers trust us. They know they're our members. That's how we do our work. They fund our work. So it's not like the Department of Labor coming to them and saying, you guys got to get better organized and work together. It's working with their peers, and we've had really great success. The good news is there is some organized effort that the state is actually funding a $5 million demonstration grant for talent attraction to try to attract people back here. And our partners at Invest Buffalo Niagara are trying to organize part of that. But they did UBRI did a survey, and 54% of the people that they surveyed who had some Buffalo connection, went to school here or their family was here and they left, 54% said they would consider coming back. So there is a real opportunity here if we get organized as a community around talent. Really, it's not just workforce development. It's really around talent.
So just let me kind of understand the kind of thing you got to pull together here. You got all your members. You've got, you know, 190 community partners on this workforce development thing. How in the world do you coordinate all that?
Well,
I mean, is there a way to do that so that we can all kind of like, you know, the right people can be around the table and
well, I have to tell you, so with the employer side, it's really challenging right now because we have a lot of employers saying we want your help because they've kind of heard what we're doing. And we can't accommodate everyone right now. Like I said, we're in a series of demonstration projects. But the question of how is we have really shifted how we spend our members' money to about 24% of our total budget now is in workforce-related activities. We hired a vice president of talent programs, Juliana Jansen, who worked for Goodwill for a long time. She just started with us a couple weeks ago. We're hiring a director of talent pipeline management. We have another staff member who's working exclusively with employers. And we have now created an executive director position for the coalition. So we were trying to do all this work with one or two people, and now we've sort of reallocated our own internal resources to get the right people to do this. And quite honestly, we have to leverage our relationships the partnership's strength is our ability to collaborate. And so this won't happen without a true community collaboration. And I think this is part of the challenge, and it gets to, I know Patrick Kaler's been on your show and the county executive's been on your show, and this all connects to how much we promote the community and what our community's brand is. That's a big piece of this whole strategy. So you've got leading organizations. If I were to say the partnership is really working on trying to organize the workforce system, that work is being supported with philanthropy. We've got our partners at Invest Buffalo Niagara trying to do an active data-based attraction strategy with other community partners with the state. And we've just got to, the third leg of that stool in my mind is really closing the branding gap for our community, because all economic development starts with a visit. And anybody, you know, I hear this all the time, recruiters call someone for a job and they say, I've got this great opportunity, but it's in Buffalo. Right. Not and it's in Buffalo, right? We have to address that as a community, and and the county executive has the power to improve this with his pen. But if you look at what we have invested in telling our story, Visit Buffalo Niagara's budget is about $4 million. If you look at the Metro 50 around us, you've got Grand Rapids, their budget's over $10 million. Salt Lake City's over $19 million. Even Little Birmingham, Alabama's at almost $8 million. So we can't, and I have to laugh because, you know, their very successful ad campaign is called The Unexpected Buffalo. And I want to say, no kidding, it's unexpected. We haven't told anybody about it. And we're in a 20-year deficit of getting our message out. So to me, that is the third prong of this strategy, is really getting out the message that this is not, your grandfather's Buffalo. This is a great place to live. The people here are amazing. And, come check it out.
What do you need from the community that you're not getting right now in terms of putting forward this attraction strategy?
Well, right now we actually have a take action button on our website to tell the county that they should use the bed tax allocation properly and invest. You know, the county used to take 55% of the bed tax and give it to the CVB, and they changed that, and now they're at less than 30%, about 31%. And we have to spend money in marketing this community. Earned media is not a marketing strategy. And the group that's in charge of that, Visit Buffalo Niagara, they are amazingly talented people. Many of them have been there for a couple decades. They've gotten unbelievable results in social media because they had to, because they didn't have any money. But I just think now is the time to tell our story. So if you are listening to this and you agree, please go to our website and click on the take action. You may have to hunt around a little for it, but under the tourism funding, you can tell your legislators exactly how you feel about it, and hopefully that they can correct. That's it. There are a lot of problems in our community that cannot be fixed with money. That's one that can.
Well, we've got a whole bunch of questions that are flying at us right now.
Oh, golly.
Including voluntary income tax assistance for free tax preparation.
The United Way does that.
United Way.
Yep.
And also, can we secede from New York State and join another state? Or maybe join Ontario? I don't know. And the tax credit question came up again. I'm sorry I can't get to all these questions today. We will address them, though.
I'll come back.
We'll have Dottie on for her eighth time.
That's right.
In the near future. Dottie Gallagher, thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
President CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership. You're doing great work. I want it to continue. I want to thank our listeners for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.